Our next case is Altawan v. Amazon, 2025-12-85. We're ready when you are, Mr. Gerst.
Yes, Your Honor. Just a moment. Thank you.
Good morning, and may it please the Court. I'm going to begin, perhaps counterintuitively, with the Daubert expert testimony on damages rejection.
Well, if you don't mind, I'd rather you begin on the heart of the case, which is the claim construction, not clear. If you're challenging the claim construction on non-blocking bandwidth, if so, how? What is your proposed claim construction, and why did the district court err?
Certainly, Your Honor. So the district court here made three claim construction errors. The first was denying the plain meaning of cooperating service provider at the beginning of the case, and instead construing that term as blocked bandwidth. That was a legal determination. It's reviewed.
Okay, on that point, let me ask you a process question.
Sure.
Because this is, we've been here before.
Yes, sir.
I wasn't on the original panel, but there's an opinion we have that consisted of a remand, which is why we're here now. And I don't understand, so you can explain to me how the remand included a different construction of community service, cooperating service providers. I thought the remand was quite limited to the non-blocking and whether it can be done if we have nuclear war and that thing.
So, Your Honor, in the first appeal, the issue is construction of the term cooperating service provider, which is the term that appears in the claim. That was at issue in the opening claim construction dispute at the first appeal. Now, because non-blocking bandwidth is part of that construction as a result of the court's construction, that was something that was in dispute as well at that hearing. And the court concluded that what the district court had done with respect to non-blocking bandwidth was in error and remanded it. But the Court of Appeals refused to touch the construction of cooperating service provider until that issue was decided.
And where do you glean that from? Because all I see about cooperating service provider in our prior precedential opinion is, to add to the confusion, Altawan contends that it can establish infringement under the district court's construction of the term cooperating service provider once the internet availability language is included, because the plain and ordinary meaning of the term simply means a service provider that cooperates.
Well,
and then they never say another word about it. And in the remand, which is to consider the case consistent with this opinion, it just tells the district court to deal with the non-blocking bandwidth.
Well, Your Honor, so what happened in the last appeal was the Court of Appeals thought that the stipulation was not clear enough about the problems with the construction of cooperating service provider. So that was part of the reason for the remand, to fix the stipulation. And that's what we've done. If you look at our stipulation now, it makes clear why construction of cooperating service provider is a problem.
Let me see if I can,
yes.
Following up on Judge Prost's question, in the opinion, as I understand it, in the last appeal, there were two patents at issue, correct?
No, just one, Your Honor. Two claims in one patent.
There were two patents at issue. If you look at the opinion, it refers to both.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes.
Okay. One of those patents, not at issue here, used the term non-blocking bandwidth in the claims that were asserted, correct?
I believe that's correct.
Okay. And then one of them, which is the one that we're talking about here, only uses cooperating service provider. Is that also correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, of the panel decision is that there were those two terms, but because your stipulation of non-infringement was so confused, they couldn't figure out what they had to actually decide to resolve the case, and so they sent it back. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. And then of those two terms, however, there was a dispute that they thought they could give guidance on, which is on this term non-blocking bandwidth, and they gave some guidance as to that term. Still with me?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. But they did not, from your perspective, they did not say anything about cooperating service provider and how that should be construed.
No, and I think they said that at this point in the opinion, the Court of Appeals held that they declined at that stage to address the construction of cooperating service provider. And the reason for that was the concerns with the stipulation, which both we and Amazon have remedied in the current stipulation.
All right. Now, but I listened to the oral argument from that appeal. And I have to say that it did sound like you were mingling the two terms, meaning that you were taking as given that non-blocking bandwidth was part of the cooperating service provider definition, and the only issue was whether non-blocking bandwidth had to be provided under all circumstances, including things like a nuclear war. I mean, that's what it sounds like if you listen to the oral argument.
Well, Your Honor, regardless of the reason of how it sounds, if you've read the briefing, the reason why we're talking about non-blocking bandwidth is because the district court construed cooperating service provider to require non-blocking bandwidth. And that's why we talked about it. Even though it doesn't appear anywhere in the claims of the 478 patent, which is the one currently at issue in this case, that's the only patent at issue. There's no non-blocking bandwidth in the claims, but the district court added that term in through construction. So that's why we talked about it. But the core issue is construction of cooperating service provider.
Okay, now cooperating service provider, would you agree that that term is used interchangeably with participating ISX/ISP locations, which is a term that appears in some of the other claims in the patent?
Absolutely not, Your Honor, and for multiple reasons. First of all, those terms are never used together in any context anywhere in the intrinsic evidence. The term participating service provider, and it can be participating internet service provider or participating ISX, and those are two very different things, that is never used in conjunction with cooperating service provider. Cooperating service provider is something that the patentee intentionally chose, a different term. Different terms are presumed to have different meanings. Intentionally chose to distinguish from participating service provider in the specification.
Okay, what's the difference between cooperating service provider and participating ISX ISP locations?
Okay. So first of all, the term non-blocking bandwidth is only used once.
Hold on.
Sure.
Let's break it down. Service provider.
Sure.
Just that. All right. That
term non-dispute.
That refers to ISX and ISP locations, right?
No, a service provider is service provider. It can encompass, yes, ISXs and ISPs. That's
anything
correct.
Else?
I don't know. That's not before us right now. I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
Counsel, okay. What is before us, we're reviewing a decision of the district court.
Yes, Your Honor.
And we're construing a term which is in the claim, which is not in the specification.
Yes.
So we've got to rely on what is in the specification. And isn't it correct that the closest language in the specification is what the court focused on, but added extra language while the network is able to transmit data? Isn't that essentially correct? Maybe we should modify that, but why shouldn't we otherwise affirm? Because the court looked at the specification for interpreting this claim term that is otherwise not there and relied on that.
So for two reasons, Your Honor. First of all, the term non-blocking bandwidth is associated with the service provider only once in the specification. And I know it looks like more because the defendant here...
But that's one more time than cooperating service provider.
Yes, Your Honor. But all the more reason to think that perhaps cooperating service provider is not the same as participating ISX. And that's the other thing. They only used it in the context of a participating ISX, which is something very specific. It's not any service provider. It's a participating internet service exchange. So they used it, the specification used it a single time with respect to a very specific type of service provider. The specification also talks about service providers multiple times saying these service providers can be selected for a whole host of different reasons. If you look at column 11, lines about 11 to 15 of the specification, it says that service providers are selected for a whole host of different reasons. And in fact...
Let me just make sure that
yes.
I'm understanding your response to Judge Lurie's question. So as to the language that the district court focused on, even if you were to concede that, even if you agreed, I know you disagree, that cooperating and participating mean the same thing, Okay, you're saying that the language doesn't cover all the service providers because it only talks about ISX facilities, is that right?
Correct. That's one of the many problems with that.
And can you help me understand? So the sentence is, participating ISX facilities agree to provide non-blocking bandwidth between their sites. What does their sites mean in that sentence?
Other participating ISXs. So the way these networks work is you have an initial ISP, which provides access to the internet, and then you have ISXs, which are intervening, which pass things along the chain. And so they're intended to be multiple ISXs. At one point in the specification, it says you're going to have a lot of ISXs here intervening between the two internet service providers on either end.
Okay, so just so I understand, you're saying that there's two, even if participating means the same thing as cooperating, then there's two problems with relying on this language. One, it only refers to ISXs and not ISPs, which we know is within the service provider definition. And then two, it's only talking about the connections between ISX facilities and nothing else. And so it can't be definitional on what cooperating service provider is. Is that fair?
That's fair, but there's a third reason, Your Honor, and that is that the specification is rife with situations referring to service providers providing type of bandwidth that is not non-blocking bandwidth. We cited in our brief 16 different instances where they referred to service providers providing a type of bandwidth different than non-blocking bandwidth.
And just zooming out a little bit.
Yes.
So in terms of the claims, you make the argument in your briefing that imposing these requirements on cooperating service provider would impose some of the limitations that are elsewhere in the claims, which we're usually not supposed to do, meaning that there are other claims and claim terms that refer to some of these bandwidth requirements, load limitations, things like that, and that shouldn't be imported into the cooperating service provider term. Can you just...
Yes, Your Honor. Claims 19 and 20 do just that. They talk about bandwidth obligations that are different from non-blocking bandwidth. And I just want to say one final thing. Non-blocking bandwidth appears in the claims of the patent immediately before this one in the family and immediately after, but not in this one, which exhibits a clear intent not to include that non-blocking bandwidth concept in these claims. I see that I'm now in my rebuttal time. I'd like to reserve that time, if I may, if I've answered your questions for the time being.
We will save it for you.
Thank you.
Ms. Amelow.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Now, the non-infringement stipulation in this case rests on two independent grounds by admission. I'd like to focus on the second one because I think it's perhaps more straightforward than the first one. And the second one is that both parties agree that there is no infringement because the accused technology does not provide bandwidth that is always available and always sufficient because there are mundane failures in any network, and in those situations, they do not provide this bandwidth, and therefore, there is no infringement. Now, the district court on remand decided by taking extrinsic evidence and looking and sort of analyzing credibility of the experts, there was a live hearing, that a correct construction cannot exclude these mundane efforts because then it will be contrary to what the invention is. The district court made factual findings that are viewed for clear error. There are no errors identified by AlterOne.
So yes, can I ask you, because yes. I'm new here, I'm the new guy, which is understanding that the district court relied on extrinsic evidence and made certain factual findings. If, hypothetically, I know you disagree with this, but if the claim construction issue can be resolved on the intrinsic record, then that presents a question of law that our review would be de novo, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. That's the general standard, yes.
And it is only if the intrinsic record does not resolve the dispute that we would then resort to extrinsic evidence at which the standard of review would be different.
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct.
Okay, please continue.
Thank you, Your Honor. So because the district court made those findings, and the reason why those findings here are important and should be considered by the panel in the court is because the issues that were sent down on remand, right, there is nothing in the specification and in the intrinsic evidence that talks about what happens to the non-blocking bandwidth if there is nuclear war, right? Because that was the main argument at the hearing, as Your Honor correctly noted. Is there a question, Your Honor?
No.
Oh, okay. As Your Honor correctly noted. So that was the reason why the district court, yes.
So now I have a question.
Yes.
Now that I've heard that part. So How do you get from, so I understand your position on non-blocking bandwidth, but help me understand why that should be incorporated into the definition of cooperating service provider. So your friend on the other side said that focusing on the language in column 5, there's two issues, even if we just assume that participating means cooperating, which is one, it only refers to ISX sites, and then it only says that it applies between their sites. And so his point is, usually we don't rely on language like that, where it's not a disavowal or lexicography, to then define a claim term.
Understood, Yana. I'll answer in two parts. First, directly your question as to what are these ISX facilities or sites really mean to you? And I think it's important to look at column 4. And there are elsewhere situations, and also on column 6, where the specification uses ISXs and ISPs interchangeably. And I'll point you to one instance where it talks about in paragraph that starts on line 15 in column 4 of the 478 patent. In the middle, that's where it starts by saying key characteristics of all species in the genus of the invention, and then goes on and talks about on line 22, that Altaron packets are routed to the routers of pre-selected ISX facilities. Then the next sentence, it refers to these pre-selected facilities as the pre-selected ISX/ISP facilities. That is one instance in the specification where it's clear that both of those ISXs and ISPs are used interchangeably.
Well, why would we read those references as being, as saying that ISXs and ISPs are interchangeable, as opposed to saying that with respect to that other claim language, that is language that applies to both ISXs and ISPs in contrast to the language in column 5. For instance, you could have the same position that you're talking about using language from the specification to inform the definition, but instead rely on language from column 7, line 4, which says, selection of only ISX/ISP facilities that limit the traffic in their data paths so as to have a great deal of spare capacity. And that could be language that you'd import in. And isn't that precisely why we don't import language in from the specification? Because there's lots of different language that we could choose from?
Generally, that is correct, and that is the rule. But you cannot ignore how the paragraph on the bottom of column 4 starts that discusses non-blocking bandwidth. And that is important because two paragraphs prior to that start by talking about a key characteristic of all species in the genus of the invention, and it describes what it is.
So where are you reading now?
Paragraph on lines 10 and on lines 15 of column 4. Those are two preceding paragraphs that talk about basically the entire invention. And then on line 65, and I need glasses now, it starts by saying, in other words, the quality of service problem that's plagued prior attempts is solved by providing non-blocking bandwidth, then defines it, and then the next sentence says that these participating ISX facilities provide this non-blocking bandwidth between the sites. And the specification, yes, Your Honor.
So focusing on this language that you just pointed to,
yes, Your Honor.
It says the quality of service problem that has plagued prior attempts is solved by providing non-blocking bandwidth. And then it refers to participating ISX facilities, plural, right? So is it the network that's providing non-blocking bandwidth, or is it one specific participating ISX facility that's providing non-blocking bandwidth? Because if it's the network in general, then that would suggest that it's the entire claim structure, like all the different elements of the claim and the network in general, that's providing that non-blocking bandwidth, not one specific provider. So can you help me with that?
Yes, Your Honor. The summary of the invention, if we just focus on that, because we know that summary of the invention is usually more important maybe than the rest of the specification describing embodiments, is very, very clear, right? And the prosecution history is also very clear. What this invention is about is pre-selecting these service providers, and again, the specification talks about both ISPs and ISXs interchangeably. You pre-select them because the routers of these service providers provide very specific quality of service, and it's talk about this non-blocking bandwidth. And in column 6, it uses a slightly different language but clarifies, right, and confirms it. It talks about that these ISXs and ISPs provide bandwidth that is there for the worst-case scenario a customer may ever need. In other words, always available and always sufficient for whatever it is the customer would need.
So why isn't the best reading of that that it's referring to the AlterOne network in general, meaning the network is great, it's amazing, for its customers, it will always provide the necessary bandwidth. But it's not talking about each specific cooperating service provider specifically, because the whole premise of the network is that it can redirect traffic to different service providers if it needs to, right? And so it's the network in general that's providing this kind of capability and not one particular cooperating service provider standing alone.
There is no Ultra One network per se, right? This is about routing data over the internet. We're talking about public internet.
No, and the Ultra One network, you agree that in the specification there's reference to the Ultra One network.
Right. Yes, Your Honor. And the way this Ultra One network is described, right, is that you pre-select these service providers, public service providers that also now will agree to provide this very specific quality of service in this non-blocking bandwidth to Ultra One packets while doing something else for non-Ultra One packets. And because they all work together, that is how the network is sort of formed. But the packets go over the internet. And without these providers, right, pre-selected providers providing the specific non-blocking bandwidth, there is no Ultra One network because it's just the internet.
And can you help me with some of the claims in this patent? For instance, let me give you an example. Claim 21, all right? So claim 21 utilizes the method of claim 18, but it talks about identifying a set of known locations where the locations are these providers, these sites. And then it says pruning the set of known locations by eliminating from the set locations not associated with bandwidth sufficient to meet the load. But under your construction, every cooperating service provider always has sufficient bandwidth. So why would there be a claim that refers to some of those providers not having sufficient bandwidth?
And you want a very fair question. I haven't analyzed claim 21. This claim was also added years, more than a decade later, right? And I haven't specifically analyzed it to see whether there is even written description support for this claim, right? But the specification is very clear that every service provider involved in routing these packets, right? And that is the purpose of this invention, because the problem before was, if you just send it over the internet, you will not know what happens. It can go over a different path, and those paths may have different characteristics. So to solve that problem, you select these service providers, very particular ones. They agree to provide this non-blocking bandwidth. It's described as the solution to the problem. And that is the only reason why this invention works, because if you don't have these participating providers providing this non-blocking bandwidth, we're back in the prior art problems that the patent says plague the internet, using the internet as the backbone.
So you think we should affirm the claim construction in toto?
The district court, our position, absolutely. The district court was correct on construing the term and on the remand, taking into consideration what the previous panel said, and correctly assessing credibility of both expert witnesses, because the specification is silent as to what should excuse this always provision, correctly founded, then yes, the construction is correct, and so is the stipulation of non-infringement. Yes, Your Honor.
Just to understand your position on the prior appeal, would you agree that the panel did not construe cooperating service provider and only rendered some guidance on non-blocking bandwidth? Is that fair?
That is correct, Your Honor. The panel did not construe any term, just provided guidance.
On non-blocking bandwidth?
Correct, as it was incorporated into cooperating service provider and as a standalone term in the other patent that's no longer at issue.
And just to give you another example, you had mentioned the worst case load, that language from the specification.
On page 7, on paragraph, yes, yeah.
Right, and so if you look at claim 22, which is the very next claim from claim 21, which we previously discussed, it talks about the method of claim 21, which we discussed, where the load is the worst case load. And so again, why aren't we importing limitations from some of these other claims into the definition of cooperating service provider when they're in other claims that are asserted?
I don't think the worst case load is somehow contradictory with a construction that includes non-blocking bandwidth in it, because non-blocking bandwidth does not necessarily mean that it's a worst case in every instance, right? It's just there available for the customer to use as they need it. And so there is no contradiction, and that there is no claim differentiation issue here, because the scope of that claim is very different. I can address other points if there are no more specific questions for me that my colleague raised. And that is specific one about sort of the participating versus cooperating service provider that Your Honor asked earlier. And I think that was, Your Honor was suggesting it, what was Your Honor was suggesting is correct. The term cooperating service provider does not appear in the specification. It was added more than 10 years later after the specification was filed. And the fact that the patentee later decides to use some term does not mean that it eviscerates what the specification really discloses. And the only thing the specification talks about, that is what can be the written description for cooperating service provider, is these participating service providers, which are the ones that IXSX and ISPs that I talked about, that the solution is for them to provide non-blocking bandwidth, right? And so because, and the clarification, and just to want to make clear that what it is that my colleague and his team would like to do with the claim construction on the reverse, right? Their position, and I'll brief, and the court's, district court's, order is very clear on it. They would like this term to mean, as long as the network is working and the customer is getting the bandwidth that they need, then the network is operational and you need to provide this non-blocking bandwidth. But the moment the network is not giving you the bandwidth that you want, now the network is non-operational and you don't need to provide non-blocking bandwidth. This completely eviscerates the actual invention and what the specification describes as the solution and cannot be correct, and therefore the district court correctly determined that after taking, listening to the experts and making the credibility determinations using the extrinsic evidence that they needed to do. If there are no other questions for me, I will rest here.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Gerst, this is an expired patent, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is there other, are there other challenges to it? Elsewhere in the PTO?
No, Your Honor. So I just want to point the panel to four areas of the intrinsic evidence that support us. First is the file history for this patent, where they use cooperating service provider in the context of blocked bandwidth, not non-blocking bandwidth, which is in direct conflict with the construction of non-blocking bandwidth that the district court issued and that my able opposing counsel suggests and would like. Second, in terms of interchangeable use of ISX and ISP, if you look at column 4, lines 19 to 23, the patentee made clear that these two terms have different meaning. Column 4, lines 19 to 23. It says, there the Ultra One packets are routed to the routers of only preselected ISX facilities on the Internet. And before that, it says the encrypted Ultra One data is sent through a high-bandwidth dedicated local loop connection to the first participating Ultra One ISX or ISP facility. And then it goes on to say then it just goes to the ISXs.
Can you help me with the context where we are in this lawsuit, meaning that hypothetically, if there were to be a remand on the claim construction issue, what happens next? Is there summary judgment still on the horizon?
Summary judgment has been issued. It's now ready for trial from our perspective, Your Honor.
All right. Very good. Please continue.
Second of all, in terms of interchangeable use, the fact that they didn't use the term interchangeably when referring to service providers and non-blocking bandwidth is pretty informative that it wasn't intended to apply to everything. Third, if you look at column 11, lines 13 to 15, I referred to it in my opening argument. It says, column 11, lines 13 to 15, that Ultra-Wide networks by design require selection of the ISX ISP partners for any given network based on many factors, including the ease of implementation. So it's not saying that they've got to be the ones that provide non-blocking bandwidth. There are a whole host of factors that get considered. Finally, Your Honors.
I'm going to stop you again.
Sure.
Just make sure I've got this right in my head. You said that summary judgment had already been issued, but what I'm saying is if there were to be a modification to the claim construction and this case went back to the district court, you're saying it would be just go to trial? There's no summary judgment motions that the court would have to resolve?
Not with this construction of cooperating service provider. So what happened was—
I'm saying if it's modified,
sure,
and it goes back such that the stipulation would no longer be in effect, what would happen next in the district court?
So the district court reversed itself at summary judgment on this claim construction issue. So if you were to remand on the definition of, and gave the construction of blocked bandwidth, which was the
term. Was that the only issue raised on summary judgment, or are there other issues that would have to be resolved by the district court if this went back?
So the district court, what happened was there were numerous summary judgment motions pending. The district court said, pick your best three, and the first time you lose one, you lose the other ones. And so this was the first one. I can't remember exactly what happened, but
so in fairness, it would go back for a reappraisal of the defendant's summary judgment motions.
Perhaps. I don't know since the prior summary judgment motion was about the definition of blocked bandwidth, if it were to go back there, I probably, Your Honor, I guess that probably is right. Yes.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Time has expired. Case is submitted.